Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Final Countdown by Yuri Yelenkov. Translated by Ksenia Akulova. Narrated by Mike Carnes. Chapter 1. Earth Federation, Orion System. Rhapsody, the Orange Zone, a.k.a. The Verge. Limbo Border. Thunderbird's Clan Fort. The creatures are coming in waves. The turrets are rattling. Plasma grenades are exploding, one after the other, casting a deathly pale light on the fighters and turning them into characters in a holographic horror movie with dead faces. The overheated barrels of pulse emitters are glowing crimson, but the creatures keep coming. Just a little longer, and the Xenos will crush our positions, at best pushing back the defenders, or, at worst, tearing them to pieces or trampling them to death. The perimeter is bursting at the seams. It's hard to predict how much time we have left. Maybe 5 minutes, maybe 10, or maybe as much as there are cartridges left in our magazines. I extend the Hornet's barrel, aim at a Dementor hovering over the battlefield, and open rapid fire at the monster. Incendiary rounds. These creatures can only be taken down by incendiary rounds, or plasma, just like most of the others. But the others at least have a brain that can be destroyed, and most of the time you can guess where it's located. These creatures, though, all they are pieces of flesh. So yes, only incendiary rounds. The flying meatball bursts into flames, makes a sharp turn, and crashes into the ground. The Xenos' ranks falter, having lost their coordinator, but immediately straighten up and push forward with renewed vigor. Man, how many of you are there? Suddenly, a nimble creature charges at us from the darkness. A quick burst of gunfire, and the spider-looking Xenos twitches and freezes on the spot, its chitinous body riddled with bullets. However, it still manages to achieve its goal. One of the fighters, pierced by its blades, freezes next to it. And then another one.
Altai!
Someone's desperate screaming comes through comlink.
The turret!
I empty the magazine, jump back to replace it with a new one, and glance over to where a red dot is flashing on the tactical interface. Crap! One of the turrets holding back the Xenos on the right flank has gone silent. The creatures must have gotten to the gunner. Damn it. Hold your ground, I bellow. I grab one of the two remaining grenades out of my tactical vest, set the delay, and toss it into the abominable mass of clattering blades, claws, and fangs. Without waiting for it to go off, I sling my small arm system behind my back, pick up my pulse emitter with the last power cell in it, and rush to the turret. An ugly shape flashes ahead. I fire a plasma bolt at it without aiming. The creature screams, thrashing about in agony. I run around the dying Xenos and accelerate, realizing it's too late. The aliens have breached the perimeter, sweeping over our positions like a tidal wave. Screaming wildly, someone's still trying to shoot back, but it's clear that this is the end. The screaming stops. Growling, I raise my pulse emitter. A shot. Another one. One more. Flashes illuminate the surroundings. I bite my lip so hard it starts bleeding, but I can't even feel pain. Our positions no longer exist. I knew this before I opened fire as I watched the dots go out one by one on the tactical screen. Each dot is a human life. Interrupted. Looking at the icons on the combat interface is one thing, but seeing it with your own eyes is quite different. A solid mass of ugly, quasi-flesh is swarming where people fought just a minute ago. My brothers in arms. My friends. With a roar of rage, I switch the pulse emitter to fan beam mode and pull the trigger, slowly moving forward. Each plasma bolt drives back the Xenos' ranks, leaving charred corpses on the ground. But the success is temporary. Once the power cell runs out... I'm not going to wait until that happens, though. As I keep firing, I approach the silent turret and quickly inspect it. Realizing what happened, I curse through my teeth. The turret is powered by the same power cells as the handheld pulse emitters, except it takes much longer to recharge after replacing the cells. Apparently, the system failed to keep track of the charge level and ran out of ammo at a critical moment, and charging the last remaining battery took longer than the gunner had expected. Crap. The last power cell rattles on the concrete. I leap towards the turret, discarding the useless pulse emitter, grab the rubberized handles, and press the trigger button. The drive howls. The readiness bar slowly creeps to the right. Too slow. The gun signals that it's ready for battle when the first creatures are no more than a dozen feet away. Grinning rapaciously, I turn the turret, aim it at the advancing Xenos, and pull the trigger again. The twin barrels of the pulse emitter spit out plasma bolts, sweeping away the first ranks of the Xenos. I laugh, triumphantly. My brain, not knowing how to respond to the adrenaline storm raging in my system, is trying to save my sanity as best it can, but I still feel like I'm on the verge of a breakdown. Fire. Again. Again. I fire quick bursts, moving the gun from left to right, clearing the perimeter of the approaching Xenos like a gardener armed with a hose cleans a path of dirt after a rain shower. Fire. Again. Again. Yes. That's it. Perfect. Wait. What's that sound? Ah! Who cares? Fire. Again. Again. All of a sudden, I hear beeping. As I emerge out of the veil of rage that shrouded my mind, I try to understand what the hell is beeping here. Then I curse. The power cell, the last battery is running out. And with it, my lifespan. Two magazines in the Hornet are enough to make my way back to the other fighters, but they're not enough to hold back the creatures rushing forward. If I leave the position, they will sweep over the perimeter, breaking through its depths to where... No. I can't. Something's beeping again. What the hell? And that's when the sky gets torn apart. At first, it seems as if the vault of heaven has become as hard as steel, broken into two parts and collapsed onto my head. Then I start thinking that one of the creatures has gotten to me, and what is happening is nothing more than the agony of my dying brain. But the rumble turns into a howl. Something flashes above my head, a blood-red bubble of an explosion thundering far ahead. I finally realize what it is, a multi-purpose orbital assault aircraft. With its engines howling, the Harpy passes overhead at a low altitude, nearly brushing its bottom against the fortifications, before rapidly rocketing back up into the low clouds. In its wake, an entire fleet of aircraft rushes down from above, three predatory, elongated silhouettes carrying 12 doses of highly concentrated, densely packed death under their short wings. An explosion. Another one. And then another one. The ground trembles, making me lose my balance. But all this is just a warm-up, an overture to the main part. Fiery flashes cut through the sky. Several dozen meteors are hurtling toward the planet's surface at breakneck speed, aiming to become meteorites as quickly as possible. Contact. 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 Night turns into day. This time the ground doesn't just tremble. It bounces so much that it knocks me off my feet. Lying on my back, I look up at the sky with a stupid smile on my face, staring at the blooming flowers of the reverse thrusters. Soon, there are so many of them that I feel like I'm watching a Federation Day fireworks display. Landing ships. A lot of landing ships. The fleet. The fleet has come to the rescue. We're saved. Startled, I opened my eyes and sat up. For the first few seconds, my addled brain desperately tried to figure out what was going on, and why it was so dark and quiet around when just a second ago the explosions were hurting my ears, and the flashes were burning my eyes even through the helmet's filters. And then it dawned on me. It was a dream. Just a freaking dream. Yeah, I hadn't dreamed of Caliban in a long time. I thought I had long left it all behind, but nope. The past had caught up with me. I turned around and reached out to hug Skylar, but all I felt was an empty bed. Wait a minute. Was that a dream, too? No way. You couldn't dream of something like that. And the pleasant fatigue felt in every cell of my body was perfect proof of that. I remembered last night and couldn't wipe a happy smile off my face. Sex with Skylar was very different from sex with Margot and Vicky. While Vicky was gentle and submissive, and Margot would take the initiative sometimes but still preferred to be led, Skylar was the same in bed as she was in everyday life, wild and fierce as if she were fighting a sworn enemy. I also found myself being very different around her. Then, at some point, I unconsciously turned on Psi Scanner and drowned in the ocean of emotions. Our bodies and minds would intertwine into a ball that exploded over and over again, like a supernova. When it was finally over, I felt completely drained. I hadn't felt this empty, even after using my abilities. Wow. Shaking my head, I got to my feet and sent a command to the control unit to turn on the lights. I felt great and elated until a sudden thought of the latest events sent shivers down my spine, as if someone had poured a bucket of ice-cold water down my scruff. It was like waking up as a kid in the morning. Everything was wonderful, and you wanted to laugh and enjoy life. And suddenly you remembered that you had forgotten to tell your mom that the school principal wanted to talk to her. Sure, it wasn't the best comparison. Although, when I was a kid, having to tell my mom, who was always tired and had no time for anything because of her work, that she had to go see the principal seemed like a major catastrophe. So there was still something in common. All right, if I could still crack a joke, things weren't that bad. I picked up my clothes off the floor, tossed them into the ultrasonic cleaner, and headed for the shower. I found Sanders in the garage. Work was in full swing, the fighters bustling about like ants, welding sparks flying through the air, cutting torches blazing. The clan leader, a bit rumpled, was standing off to the side, talking to two guys who looked like mechanics. "It'll be fine, I'm sure. Just add some extra mounts under the tank. That'll do." "All right, go. The clock's ticking." Sanders let the mechanics go and waved to greet me. "Finally. Got enough sleep?" the Thunderbird's clan leader asked. "Although, considering the pretty face who jumped out of your room this morning, you didn't get to sleep much." I let the body remark slide. "What have we got here?" Sanders shrugged his shoulders. "We're getting ready, as you can see. I talked to the guys. Almost everyone agreed to go to Elysium." "Almost? I can't force people to go to their death." Sanders shrugged again. His tone made me uncomfortable. "We've got 70 men," he continued. "4 armored trucks and 3 harvesters, but 4 with yours. My guys are converting the harvesters into additional armored trucks, installing weapons and trying to make cargo compartments at least look like troop compartments." "Uh-huh," I muttered. "So, about the weapons, heavy weapons, I mean, do we have anything more formidable than machine guns?" "We do," Sanders nodded. "But, you know, the corporations are no fools. They never sold us anything too dangerous. They were too afraid the people would storm the green zones, which, by the way, is what we plan to do. But there's still something. My guys have taken a lot of interesting stuff off the mechs. We also invented a few things ourselves. The Xenos are not gonna like it. Neither will Sly if we can get to him through that freaking force field. Come on, I'll show you." With those words, Sanders turned around and headed deeper into the garage. I had no choice but to follow him. The force field. If that Miller dude had bribed Dis by promising to evacuate him from Rhapsody, why were they still on the planet? Why hadn't they left? Why hadn't they launched into orbit at least? After all, there must have been some kind of aircraft in Elysium that could reach the station, right? Sure, communication was cut off on Rhapsody, but you could definitely contact New Vision's headquarters and request an evacuation from orbit. So why weren't they there yet? Or were they? Oh, man, so many freaking questions, and the only way to get answers was to get to the Green Zone. Look. Sanders pointed to one of the armored trucks, on which several fighters were installing a large metal tank, grunting and swearing profusely. Another fighter was mounting some kind of extra nozzle on the twin-barreled machine gun on the turret. What is it? I looked at the Master Sergeant blankly. You can't tell? Sanders grinned contentedly. The flamethrower. Intrigued, I looked at the tank closely. A flamethrower? Loaded with napalm? Huh. How much of it was there? About 70 gallons? Interesting. Very interesting. The Xenos were afraid of fire. In the Army, sweeper teams used flamethrowers to torch nests, and they did it quite effectively. Unfortunately, flamethrowers were useless for assault teams. They were too big and heavy and ran out of ammo too quickly. That was why here, on Rhapsody, I didn't even think about flamethrowers, especially considering that fuel was almost worth its weight in gold. Sanders, on the other hand, did, and it was a great idea. A jet of napalm fired at a group of the Xenos would definitely scare them. To death, literally. Impressed? Sanders grinned. We've got 3 units. We'll mount them on the trucks. It'll be fun. The Master Sergeant seemed to have read my mind. And then there's this. He pointed to a row of pipes next to which the mechanics were bustling about. Do you recognize that? Mortars? I chuckled. Are you serious? I'm dead serious, Sanders assured me. They're makeshift, of course, but what's the difference? They're good enough for what we need. I agree, I nodded. There are also a few other little things, he continued. A few rocket launchers taken off the mechs, a couple of autocannons, a stationary pulse emitter. The bad thing is that we don't have enough cars. Can I take your harvester? Of course. I was a bit surprised. Did he think I was going to say no? I wished we had the Steelheart's vehicles. Damn. It was a shame Zeiss had died. He would have definitely helped us, and we would have had another great ally with motorized units. Making a deal with fire was out of the question, though. I wouldn't be surprised if he had joined Sly already. How long will the preparations take? I asked Sanders.
We get done today, we head out tomorrow, he shrugged. If we all pitch in, we can get everything ready before midnight and even get some sleep.
I got the hint, I nodded. Let me go get my people and bring the harvester. You'll find us something to do, right?
Sure I will, Sanders laughed. Or you think a Master Sergeant can't figure out how to keep his staff busy?
My bad, sir. Smiling, I stood at attention and saluted him. Permission to carry on, sir?
Permission granted. On the double, Sanders bellowed.
I grinned and went to look for Skylar. Chapter 2 Earth Federation, Orion System, Rhapsody, the gray, conditionally safe zone, a.k.a. Limbo, near the Verge's border. Traveling through Limbo with a small group was easier. When we had been trying to get away from Sly, we had had to go around the most impassable spots on the outskirts of the gray zone, break through the woods, and go straight through the industrial zone. With armored trucks and 7 dozen fighters, things were much more complicated. We had to forego caution. Every now and then, we had to stop and fell trees to clear the way or drag the fallen trees out of the way. A squad of scouts led by Skylar was scouring the area in search of a better road, but every time she came back at the specified times, she'd only shrug her shoulders. There was no better road. Even if we made a big detour, it wouldn't do us any good. I distinctly remembered the lunar landscape Dis and I had waded through trying to bypass the town.
If we took the same route, we'd have to carry the trucks by hand, and given their size and weight, all in all, we had no other options. After a few hours, we reached the memorable site of the battle with the multi-platform. Its skeleton still towered above the bushes, though the inhabitants of Limbo had taken everything off the dead robot, including the armored plates. Anything came in handy in the gray zone. The armored plates most likely served as someone's shelter or had been traded for something else. I wonder who's running the market now. We clashed with small packs of Xenos twice on the way, determined to make their way into Elysium through the compromised perimeter. The creatures paid us no heed, but I really wanted to try out Sander's flamethrowers, and they proved their worth. We hit a pack on the second try, and the effect exceeded all expectations. The trick would have probably failed if the creatures didn't have pain receptors. Maybe this point hadn't been taken into account in the production of the morphs, or maybe the pain sensations had been added to improve self-preservation. I didn't know the reason. But once we hit them, the creatures went crazy. Smaller morphs like spiders and scorpixes died on the spot, unable to endure pain, shock, and burns. The bigger creatures began to run around in a panic, and we had to shoot them to keep them from setting the forest on fire. All in all, the flamethrowers had passed the test with flying colors, making me a bit more optimistic about our plan and moving it from the completely hopeless to the impossible category. And that was a whole different story. Then, Skylar got in touch with me. Although getting in touch would be an overstatement, radio communication wasn't really working, and the closer we got to Elysium, the more interference there was. At some point, my temple just started tingling, with a blurry picture appearing in my head. A man was being chased through the woods, ferociously, like wild game. The man would stumble, fall, get up, and keep running, but the distance between him and his pursuers was getting shorter. From time to time, one of the pursuers would stop and raise their weapon. The fugitive would have to fall face first into the ground to escape the rounds fired from the small arm system. This was actually a typical scene for Limbo. The only thing unusual about it was the use of firearms in the gray zone. But since the system could no longer penalize you for it, it wasn't surprising at all. I probably wouldn't even care about what was happening if it weren't for one small thing. The fugitive was wearing a jumpsuit with the Phoenix Group insignia on it. "Sanders, stop," I commanded into my shortwave radio. As it turned out, this range was the least susceptible to interference. While our comlinks worked worse with each dozen feet that brought us closer to Elysium, these devices, archaic but reliable, allowed us to communicate at least over short distances. To the Master Sergeant's credit, he didn't ask a single question. The convoy suddenly stopped, with fighters jumping out of the vehicles to cordon off the equipment. I got out of the ATV and jogged over to Sanders' car. "What is it?" he asked. "Give me 10 minutes," I said. "I'll be right back. Gonna get us someone who we can ask a few questions."
"Got it," Sanders nodded. "Who is it? Where? Let me send the guys."
"No," I said, shaking my head. "I'll go by myself."
"By yourself? Take at least one of the guys with you."
"There's no time. Skylar's there with the outcasts. I can do it. That's it. I'm off. You're in charge for now. If I don't get in touch in 10 minutes, act according to the circumstances." Before the Master Sergeant could object, I rushed into the thicket. We weren't too far from the scene. In just a minute, I could hear the shots quite clearly. The chase was close. I needed to pick a position. "Where are you?" I asked Skylar in my head. The response came in the form of a picture. "Uh-huh. I see." She was about 600 feet away from me, on the other side of the ravine. "Good. On my command, open fire on the pursuers. Don't kill them, just scare them off. Make sure you don't hit the fugitive." Hopefully, Skylar would get my mental message. I hadn't gotten the hang of communicating without opening my mouth just yet. The response came as a mental image that could be interpreted as, "Got it." Well, if she got it, we were set.
The Phoenix fighter appeared in sight a minute later. He rolled down the slope, looked around, and realizing he had no other choice, sprinted across the ravine in my direction. It was a risky move. Here, he was in full view of the pursuers, and they could easily take him out. But the fighter managed to break away. The pursuers' silhouettes flickered through the gaps between the trees, and he had almost crossed the open space. One of the pursuers raised his gun, aimed, and "Fire," I commanded. The outcasts aimed lower on purpose, but the pursuers were still pelted with dirt. Plasma bolts exploding close to them stunned them for a moment, allowing the fugitive to escape into the thicket. Good. Wait, what do you think you're doing? Realizing that some of the pursuers had still decided to go after the Phoenix, I raised my pulse emitter and fired a round over their heads. Plasma blasts shattered the tops of a few trees, strewing the pursuers with leaves and broken branches. This time they got the message. Shouting something unintelligibly, the pursuers retreated into the thicket. Good riddance. After giving Skylar a mental command to watch the retreating men and scare them off if they came back, I slung the pulse emitter behind my back and went to look for the fugitive. The Phoenix wasn't a fool. Instead of breaking through the thicket like a mad rhino, he had hidden in there to see what would happen. It made sense. I would have done the same thing. The corporation's former security guard had no friends on Rhapsody, at least on this side of the perimeter, but he had plenty of enemies. Everyone here would consider it their sacred duty to kill him just because of the insignia on his suit. Phoenix fighters on Rhapsody were the same as wardens in a prison. No one liked them. The fighter knew that very well, so he lay low. What he didn't know was that I wasn't just going to look for him using my normal vision. I activated the scanner, opened its umbrella to cover a bigger area, and immediately found the Phoenix without even having to use bioform detector. There he was, in a hollow by a large tree, sitting still, afraid to even breathe. Wait, what about the pursuers? I pushed the boundaries of the scanned area and spotted Skylar with a couple of outcasts and a small morph, Sarver. Apparently, the pursuers had decided to get out of here, and they weren't wrong. When someone fired their pulse guns at you from the bushes, taking off was your best choice. Good. The next step was to make contact with the Phoenix. In theory, I could have used the active camouflage system and the sound moderator I had transferred to the Punisher from my old suit to sneak up on the Phoenix unnoticed, but I immediately dismissed the idea. First of all, I wasn't going to hurt him, and he couldn't hurt me even if he wanted to. Secondly, even if I used the sound moderator, it wouldn't do me any good. Learning to move silently through the thicket took a lot of time and effort, so I had never bothered. Once again, making sure no one was around, I stepped out onto some sort of path and headed to where the Phoenix fighter was holed up without attempting to hide. The closer I got to his hiding spot, the more I felt tension, confusion, and a little bit of fear. I liked that. The guy clearly didn't know what to do, but at the same time, he wasn't terrified. Not everyone in his position could boast of that. I came out into a small clearing a dozen feet away from the fugitive, stepped into the middle, and sat down right on the grass. Then I grabbed my flask, took a few sips, and asked, looking to where the Phoenix was hiding, "You thirsty?" He was thirsty. I felt it immediately after the fugitive had processed my words. He had been suppressing his thirst up to this point, but it was getting harder for him to do so with every minute. I sensed a slight sense of doom mixed with a brief hesitation. Then the fighter rose to his feet and stepped toward me. "I am. Well then, here you go." I stood up and held out my hand with a flask in it. The fighter approached me, accepted the flask, and brought it up to his mouth greedily. I took advantage of the moment to get a good look at him. A head shorter than me, probably my age, a neat army haircut, which wasn't surprising, square jaws, a scar on his cheek, an oval face previously clean-shaven, covered with stubble now, a mud-covered suit with a torn sleeve. It seemed he hadn't had a chance to clean up in days. Having quenched his thirst, the guy handed the flask back to me. Thank you.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?